I wanted to stick around and kind of react to what Mike was talking about. I mean, first of all, I just wanted to say,
if you force me to, I will.
I'm kidding. First of all, I just want to say he's an incredibly wise man
for sure.
And just what he was talking about there at the end, the liminal space, the in between, the mm-hmm. I don't subscribe to far left progressivism, or I don't subscribe to the far right. I don't subscribe to being so religious in language that I never address a lot of the real issues in our world, but then never only ever addressing issues in the world through the language of only addressing real world issues. It's actually a gospel issue. Like that's such a weird space to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's incredible the real world work that he's been part of doing. But
yeah,
no, I wanted to say something. It was so interesting, man. I went to a church that's nearby my church. It was a pastor friend of mine was like, "Hey, you need to meet this pastor." And it was a church that they meet on Sundays, and they rent from an Adventist church. And so I know the Adventist church. So we ended up going, and it was the most surreal thing, man. So I'm brown.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is white. I have literally lived in white spaces my entire life, mm-hmm. at least majority white spaces. And I walk into this place, and I kid you not, there's like 350 people in this church, and for the size of church, it's pretty filled. We get in there, and I kid you not, there are maybe two other brown people, and they're not very brown.
Okay.
And I'm not saying like better for worse. I'm just saying like
they look like you.
It was a sea of whiteness.
Wow.
In that church. And I'm not trying to argue about their effectiveness or their love for Jesus or anything like that. But I walked into that space, and I immediately noticed it.
Mm.
Just because it was like, and I don't usually notice stuff like that because there's at least a few people who aren't just white, but it was everybody was white.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't anything against white people. I love all my white people. But I say that because then what's so interesting is the church, the church that I pastor the majority of the time, in both churches I pastor, but just to highlight the one specific, North Hill, the percentage of white versus minority people, it's like, if it's 50-50, I'm surprised. It's probably more. There's probably more minority people that are part of the church than there are white people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that to degrade white people, but just to say that the beauty of experience amongst people, of mm-hmm. like a family that has moved here from Africa, or the Hispanic family that started coming to our church in the last year or two, or the Filipino husband and his Hispanic wife, and the diversity of experience, the diversity of stories, this older white guy who he went to Cambodia back in the 60s 70s, I believe,
mm-hmm.
As part of an aid a relief effort over there, because there's wars happening and stuff, and his experience there, and just like the diversity of experience, man, it's the beauty of the gospel, I think, at play. I'm not saying that it's not present in other churches. I'm just saying that having that level of diversity within a church is so exciting to be part of, because I'm not just seeing a bunch of people that look like me, that have experienced the same things that I've experienced, that are just kind of looking at it from one perspective. You're forced into that space of like, wow, this is the beauty, the spectrum of God's people. And I just find that so beautiful. And so to unfortunately be in a place in a conversation in our country today where it's almost pitting groups against each other, it's such a hard space to be in, because it's like, man, when we're all together on this stuff, it's a beautiful thing.
It's better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel that, but.
Yeah, for sure. I think I feel two things simultaneously. You know, I think I agree with you. I feel as if, I'm thinking of, as he was talking, I was thinking of Jesus's prayer for unity in, I think, John 17, right? Where he's praying that they might be one. And I was thinking about that. Like, I actually saw that Francis Chan just is releasing a new book, and it's all about unity, and essentially him arguing like to Jesus, unity was so important. It was like the number one witness for why, like the number one thing to show the world that like the gospel is true, mm-hmm. and Jesus rose from the dead, you know, And yet it's something we struggle with the most is unity. And I totally agree.
Well, what's hard about it too, and I think this is an important thing to say, is that a lot of people say, oh, well, it's the racism conversation is what's causing the disunity. Yeah. It's like, it's not really the conversation. It's the lack of being willing to listen. It's the lack of being willing to understand a perspective that's different than mine.
Mm.
It's the assuming that I already know the answers and assuming that I already know the way things are and that my experience is indicative of everyone else's or at least a lot of other people's experience.
Mm-hmm.
And most people would say, oh, well, I don't think that, and then go out and act in those very ways. And I'm not trying to condemn anyone, but that is like the divisiveness is not the conversation about racism.
Mm.
It's like saying that like, oh, well, my wife always wants to bring out the things that I'm not doing right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, maybe the fact that she's bringing all those things out is because I'm not listening to her and she doesn't feel heard. And so she's trying to communicate that. You know? And what's interesting is, and I'll just share this from personal experience, that a lot of times I don't want to have an argument with my wife,
mm-hmm.
but then when we do, or when we fight it out, and we actually have to like listen to each other and hear each other's emotions and pain and heart in it all, and realize we actually do love each other,
yeah.
but we needed to talk about these things so that we could get back to that space of being on the same, like being on a parallel trajectory, a united trajectory, then you have to have the hard conversation. You have to go through the discomfort. You have to go through that relational what's the word?
Dissonance. Yeah.
In order to get to that space where there is unity. So unity doesn't come because we don't talk about stuff or because we all espouse the same exact ideas. Unity comes because we process through it.
Yeah. See, that's exactly it. And I feel like, you know, I interrupted myself. So, you know, what I was saying, like, I agree with you, like unity, like it's so beautiful when it happens and we should aim for it and we should strive for it. And Jesus, you know, talks so much about it. It's like, I think there's an unparalleled thing that happens when you meet someone who has not experienced what you've experienced and you realize the world is so much bigger than you thought. And you realize, wow, like my experience is just a blip amongst billions of people that have fundamentally different experiences, values, you know, et cetera. And you're like, you just realize, wow, I'm part of something so much bigger and I'm just so I'm not right about everything. And that's okay. There's a grace to that. Yeah. But then on the other hand, there's also the, exactly what you're saying. And I think, Michael hit this really well when he said this, and I wrote this down, at the root of any kind of positive change is truth telling. And I feel like that's where the dissonance often happens. Like, one party is coming to the other and trying to tell a truth. And sometimes in the telling of that truth, there's been damage and pain. So that truth telling comes across as really aggressive or angry or confrontative or, you know, and then on the other hand, the other party hearing that truth, and it's the same thing as in, like you're saying, like in a marriage or a relationship, like you're coming, you're saying, hey, you hurt me. You did this thing. Or even if you didn't do this thing, like I was made to feel this way. And the other person's like, why are you attacking me? You know,
defensiveness and I don't want to hear it and I didn't do that. And
exactly. Yeah. There's so much, like, that's the point where it breaks. But I feel like if there can be a healthy truth telling and it seems like, and we didn't get into this as much. I kind of referenced this when I said, what he was saying, like the framework he was arguing for was so countercultural. But I feel like on both ends, if there is sort of a gospel oriented, like ability to hear the other and listen to the other and like, you know, like for those doing truth telling, like those of, you know, people of color, like me, for us to say like, hey, we're doing truth telling, but to say it in love, in kindness, even if there is anger, even if there is hurt, being honest about those things, but being able to tell the truth through the lens of the gospel. And for those listening to truth telling to listen through the lens of the gospel, it seems like that's really the only way. Like,
I think one of the hardest things one of the things I kind of lament about this whole recent season of conversations surrounding race, and the multitude of things that comes from it is what you said in essence is saying the truth, even if it hurts, saying it in a way that can be heard, in a way that at least could be. And I think that's part of some of the problems that I've experienced in trying to communicate some of these ideas or at least just have the conversation about race with either church members or family members or friends or whoever it is, you know, is you're starting to have this conversation and then you use words like defund the police, you know, and it's like, I hate that statement because what it's trying to communicate is not what the words themselves communicate.
Mm.
And there's a dual responsibility here. It's the responsibility for it to be communicated well, but there's also the responsibility of the party that's it's being said to listen and understand what's being said.
Mm.
But I think one of the things that I wish was just a little bit more thought out in this time is the words that are used to then communicate the idea. Mm. And I don't know a better catchphrase off the top of my head for things like defund the police or anti-racist or things like that, because, well, anti-racist is more of the connotations that have come along with it that a lot of people in the white community are like, well, what does that mean? And mm-hmm. I don't like that. But just my point is the slogans or the words that are used or the way that it's said, you're a racist, to say that to a white person,
mm-hmm.
Is such a jarring thing. And to some people that's helpful because it's like, whoa, I needed to hear it that jarring,
yeah,
so that I could have to process it. It made me listen. Now I have to process it. But in other ways, I feel like it's been so jarring that it just causes defensiveness. It just causes the feelings of, I'm not that. How dare you call me that? Therefore, you are wrong. I'm not listening to you. And then figuring out all the ways to make that person an enemy. So, you know, unless it's like, you called me a racist. Well, you're woke. Marxist ideology is horribly wrong. It's like, you know, start the language that starts to be used. And it's just so sad because as a church, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's more so on the side of our majority culture people. I would include myself in that,
mm-hmm.
To listen well. I think that is far more important than trying to get the language right.
Mm.
If that makes sense. I think the responsibility is far more on the person who has wronged or who has been part of the wrong to listen well and understand how they wronged so that they can begin the process of asking forgiveness and reconciliation and all those things that come with that. But I do wish that we would use different language sometimes to communicate the same ideas.
Hmm.
I think that has been an unfortunate detriment through this process. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there aren't better ways. As someone who's trying to communicate some of those ideas to people that I love, in my sphere, that's been part of the hardship of it.
Oh yeah, man. I feel like I was actually talking to my sister about this the other day. We were talking about some Instagram celebrity who is being canceled right now because of some tweets that she didn't delete, like from 10 years ago or whatever. Just typical, you know, classic. So another day in the life of social media.
Is it that girl from The Bachelor?
It is that girl from The Bachelor.
She's brown, but she wrote something against, was it like...
It was a lot of stuff.
I don't remember. I think against, there's like ableism. People accuse her of mm-hmm. ableism because she said something about disabled people mm-hmm. and I think black people, but she herself is like half black or she's brown in some way. It's one of those very confusing, you look at that and you're like, wait, hold up, what's happening here? Anyways, continue.
Wild. And so there's just so many layers to it. And it's just so much drama and tea that it exhausts me that I don't even want to dive into the whole, all the nuances of it. But we were talking about that and it's so...
Let's just transition this episode from talking about racism to an episode of Bachelor drama.
Welcome to the Bachelor After Show hosted by Jesse and Anthony. Actually, I'm not even going to lie. I watched the last episode of The Bachelor last night. It was fantastic. And so...
That's a whole nother conversation. Anyways, yeah.
But it's pertinent because we're talking about this and... You know, there was this whole thing with the host of The Bachelor being canceled recently, you know, and being asked to step down from the show. And this girl, her name's Taylor, she was so vocal about him being canceled. Like, you know, he can do work, he can be forgiven, but sometimes, you know, like actions have consequences. There should be a cost cost to what you've done. And she was like such an adamant, outspoken voice for this, like relentlessly calling for him being canceled. And then these tweets from her emerged. Yeah. And it happened to her and her whole fan base, like turned on her in a second. Like if you go to any of her most recent Instagram posts, it's like, so
all the comments, I think I've seen a few. Yeah.
Oh, they're so awful. They're like, literally one was like, you called for that. There should be a professional cost for Chris. So there should be cost for you. You should lose your platform. You should lose your therapist license, like because of what you've done. And and I was talking to my sister about this now and just reflecting on, this is why I feel as if like this is actually the weight and like richness that the Jesus perspective actually has to give the world, because that's why I think these conversations around holding people accountable have to be couched in gospel love, because because none of us are perfect. Like, you, if you're calling, like, she became just the microcosm of the whole thing, where she creates this community of people who are so quick to cancel. And then as soon as she makes a mistake, her whole fan base cancels her. And it's like, it's like, if you're not. And so I actually wrote her a message, and I'm really proud of myself. This is this whole story is self-promotion, basically. I wrote her a message, and I was like, Taylor, I don't really know you.
What's her name again?
Her name's Taylor. I'm blanking. I have to go on Instagram to find out.
Anthony, I'm gonna see a news article about a pastor that slid into her DMs, and then we're gonna find out that you're married in 2 years.
Her name's Taylor.
That's gonna be the progression of this.
Her name's Taylor Nolan, and I slid into her DMs, and I basically was like,
in the most pastoral sense you can.
In the most pastoral sense, I was like, "Yo, Taylor, I don't know you. Like, we don't really have a relationship for me to speak into your life. But if I could, I would just offer a blessing to you, which is, may the unforgiveness of others lead to more empathy for those you wish not to forgive in your life."
Ooh. Okay, well, hold on. Unpack that. I need to, because that sounded so good, but I don't think I actually understood what you said. May the unforgiveness of others do what?
Lead you to more empathy for those you wish not to forgive.
Oh, gotcha. So like for someone like Chris Harrison or other people in her life, that because she has experienced the full weight of that unforgiveness or that calling for a cost, that she would not have that same empathy for others.
Exactly. Like, certainly there's people should be held accountable for things that they've done and the ways they've harmed and hurt others. But like, we're all human and we're all going to make mistakes, and we've all said things probably that we're not proud of. And so to bring this back to,
I think that that's the conversation that I feel like is the necessary conversation right now, which is, I want so badly, and I know many people want so badly, for there to be reconciliation, for there to be restorative repair done in our world. But part of the problem that I think many feel is what's being called for by at least the farther progressives is almost this: you cost us something, so we must take from you now. Is what it feels like. I'm not even saying that's what they're actually saying in many cases,
that's
what it feels like. And so, I think that matters. I think it's in the context of, I think one of the things that we failed to do through all of this is look at this as a big picture relationship. I mean, you know, we think of it in interpersonal terms, you know, between like, say, my wife and I, but we ought to look at all of this as one party being a husband, one party being a wife, doesn't matter who. But that there needs to be restoration in that sort of manner, where there is an expression of hurt that is listened to well, and heard and apologized for. You know, you hurt me. I hear that I've hurt you. I am so sorry that I've hurt you. But then the key part of restorative relational moments is that there is a coming together around the common purpose of, we are together in this. And for bigger hurts, you know, for instance, like if there's an affair in a marriage or something like that, there may be some sort of like, I'm setting these boundaries. You need to do this. You need to do this much work. You need to do this. You need to do this. You need to go to counseling, you know, all those things. But then we're working together. I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. We are working on this as a team, you know? And I think that's the part that I feel like is missed right now. Now, that being said, one side is definitely not listening very well at all. So maybe that's part of the problem, is that we can't even get to those steps of work together in this, because one side is just like, well, how dare you call me any of that? I'm not listening to you. So, but at least at the church level, at least amongst, because I can't fix the global. None of us can fix the global conversation. None of us can fix the Twitter.
The Twitter stuff.
Post with all the comments and all this stupid stuff. But what we can do is, at least on our local level, amongst our churches, amongst our friends or family members and all that stuff, is to at least live that out, is to live some sort of relational healing forward. As Michael was talking about that arc, the awareness, the relationships and the commitment. One of the commitments that I've already kind of made is to try and have conversations with people without trying to convince them specifically of, you must come out on the same side as me on this, but with the, like, let's at least talk about it. And as we talk about it, you know, it's all of a sudden I realize, like, whoa, I just said something I don't know if I agree with, you know, or I have to think about that more or whatever it is. And those conversations kind of allow us to say some of our some of the things that we might think that aren't exactly good, but then you say them in a safe context and hopefully there can be forgiveness and moving forward and all of that. I think that's a huge piece, is that restorative relational style of moving forward. It's not the only way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad that, you know, you came up to me in that middle of that theme park at around 9 p.m. and you said, hey, can I be your friend? And
this is garbage.
So we could have a no. I
was like, I don't think we've ever been to a theme park together. Wait,
we've been to Wild Waves in Washington State.
Oh, true. Well,
forever ago.
Yep.
No,
back in the high school days.
Yeah. To actually make a relevant comment as we probably wrap up here. Yeah, man, I feel like it's a hard tension because I think this is another reason why I've come to see how powerful the way of Jesus is in the world, because God is better than us. You know, like like you're describing this, there seems to be this cycle of like this party committed this hurt and this abuse and this oppression. And so the hurt party is like, well, it should cost you something. Like, you should be hurt. Essentially, that's really what it is. Like, you should be hurt in some way. It should cost you something. It should cost you your position of power. It should cost you, you know, like, there needs to be an equalizing of the scales. And then, throughout history, there's like this like cycle. It just becomes a cycle over and over where like.
Yeah. You hurt us. And then it becomes a who hurt each other first. Yeah, but that doesn't even matter anymore. Hurt me last, so I'm going to hurt you now.
Exactly. And just goes back and forth. And, you know, and so I think there's that layer of it, which is, you know, like God comes to end that whole cycle. Like he comes to forgive all sides, like, you know, like oppressed and oppressors. Like he's so much better than us. Like, and we've talked about this cause I just took a class on this last semester, which was fantastic. But, and so it's so hard, I think, especially, I guess, as a Black man, to make it personal, because like, I believe in that, like, peace intellectually. Like, God comes to end all cycles, to forgive the oppressed and the oppressors. And yet there's also, I think so often, those on the majority culture side of the conversation feel as if it's like you're seeing what the conversation is now and seeing what it will lead to down the road. And you're saying, well, that's scary. What it'll lead to down the road, that's too scary. So I can't even have this conversation because it'll lead to this and it'll lead to that. And I'm like, well, can we just have the conversation first? Like, can we just tell the truth? Can you hear this truth? Can you hear this hurt? And then maybe we can like talk about that. Like, we don't really need to worry about that yet. Like, we do need to worry about that. But like, can we, like, I'm as worried about that as you are. But
it can be weirdly prophetic.
Yeah.
It's like the, I feel like if we have this conversation, then we're going to get to a place where Marxism is taking over our country.
Right.
And it's actually, what's funny about it is if you don't listen to each other, people are going to get more extreme.
Exactly.
And it's going to be the far right or the far left that, you know, it becomes gets enough power that it starts to take over or whatever. It's a weirdly prophetic thing. Actually, the listening in the moment would do the most healing moving forward. So we avoid most of the things we're afraid of.
Oh.
So
it's a self-fulfilling prophecy
absolutely. And it's present in history. I just want to say this as you're talking about the way of Jesus. What's so powerful about it is God hates racism more than I hate it.
Yeah.
And more than anyone
way
hates
more.
It. Even the victims of racism, he hates it so much more because he knows the full effect of it. But what's crazy is he loves the racist more than anyone else could.
Yeah, exactly.
And he loves the oppressed member of the minority more than anyone else ever could,
which is why God's better than us,
more than any activist. Absolutely. But here's what's crazy about it is then God, you know, he has such a beautiful way because he says treat others as you would want to be treated, or the golden rule, but then the only command, or the greatest commandment, is love one another, love God, love one another as yourself. Here's why. It's because, for instance, I hope that majority cultures amongst white people, that there's an understanding that I wouldn't want to be treated this way. But here's the other thing too, is that that at least the way the trajectory of America right now mm-hmm. is that brown people will outnumber white people fairly soon and will be the majority at some point in the near future. And the call for us, and I say us, I'm kind of in between, but the call for anybody, but let's just say for minority culture as right now, who will be the majority someday, the call for minority culture is to say, and now you do not treat the minorities that will become the minority, the majorities that will become the minority, you don't treat them the way you were treated. That's the powerful thing. You treat them as you would wish to be treated, not how you were treated.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a crazy thing. Because the reality comes into now is like we're calling for all this stuff of like from the minority culture is calling for all this stuff, a lot of which is good, and some of the extreme stuff, which is crazy. But the question becomes, when you're in power, how will you rule?
Yeah.
You know, when the minorities become the majority, how will we rule? You know? Because, and I say that sounds terrifying. How will the minorities rule?
How will you rule?
But it's a big biblical idea. You know, when the Jews finally get their own nation, how will they rule it? Because they were ruled in slavery and oppression by the Egyptians. Will they repeat the cycle or will they be different?
They repeated the cycle.
And the same call for us today. And they did, through Solomon and beyond. But then the question comes to today. And I think that's the powerful thing that I want to think of is, when maybe my color of skin is the majority, will we listen to an oppressed white person in the way that we wished we were listened to? And I think that's the key of how we treat people even in today. And so that's not to discount the need for restoration and the need for justice and the need for sometimes hard forms of justice, which is, no, you can't do that and there's going to be consequences. That's not discounting those needs. Mm-hmm. But it is, I think, a big concept that we have to process and think through. So.
Yeah, I think that's I think exactly what you just said is what I feel conflicted about and what I feel I feel agreement and dissonance with, because I think I agree with the spirit of exactly what you're saying. And I think that's written exactly into the story of God. And that's what God does. And that's what he's about, is like ending that cycle completely. Like the cycle stops with you. Like you who, that's a, like we just said, that's a whole story of the children of Israel. And yet they repeat it. And yet I think so often that line of reasoning, what you just said, is used as a block, is used as a mask, is used as a like, yeah, I guess as an escape out of the conversation itself. It's like, well, what about you in like 5 years when you guys are the majority? Like, are you? And I know you're not doing that because I know you.
But that's
I
the thing heart, is, well, is, you know, the majority can't say that to the minority.
Yeah,
like that doesn't work that way. But however, for those of us and for anyone who is part of a minority that may become the majority, it's a question we must ask ourselves as followers of Jesus.
For us, as
followers
sure.
of Jesus.
Oh yeah.
Because it's like, is the kingdom of God going to be something that we spread when we have when those of us who have been oppressed have power, in essence?
Yeah.
Like, are we going to continue are we going to build the kingdom of God, or are we going to continue a kingdom that then forces oppression on someone else, and then, you know, and then we just repeat the cycle? And so, and of course, we know that there's not going to be complete restoration until the kingdom of God is restored, until Jesus comes back. All of that, I get all of that. Mm-hmm. And again, I exactly what you're saying. We can't, for those, and I'm going to immediately shift and include myself in majority culture now. Those of us who are part of majority culture can't then be like, well, you know, you can't treat us like that because... Because that's just a deflection of our own inner work that must be done. So it's, and that's the thing, is this is so relationally based.
It's so
relational. Is about people. Because as a person, as a husband, I can't react defensively to my wife, or else I won't hear her, and then I will perpetuate things where she's going to become more extreme in her own hurt and her own pain, which will cause her to do more extreme things. And because she's doing those things, I'm going to react and become more extreme. Well, she's just crazy. She's insane. All these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just never talk. We never actually restore anything.
Yeah.
And we just deflect and divide and get farther apart until finally it's like, well, I guess we just can't live together anymore.
Yeah.
But that's not what followers of Jesus are called to.
You just...
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, the way that you just described that, and the way that what you said before that about just reversals, when reversals happen, it's like the whole, and this is getting to another topic, we don't have to talk about this today, but it's exactly what happened from like the story of Christianity all the way to us in our last, you know, like seeing Trump in the White House and the whole journey of Christianity being a Middle Eastern marginalized religion to being the dominant
political power.
It's such a what a crazy thing that is. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. This is typically how our conversations go outside of the podcast anyway. But
no, but if I'm following you, what you're about to say is, or what you're trying to say is, in essence, that we went from the oppressed minority to the dominant majority. And now it's the gay community, it's the LGBTQ plus community that's crying out because of persecution.
Exactly.
And it's women and it's minorities who are crying out because the Christian church has been complicit and if not the main instigator of much of the oppression and hurt and pain and damage we've seen in the world. And we never stop to consider what were we before?
That's literally it. You said
holy, oh my gosh, this is insane. I've never even thought of it like that. That's wow.
Yeah, I mean that's the whole it's the cycle of how we just become Babylon without even realizing we're becoming Babylon, and God is calling us all out of the ways of Babylon. You know, it's
yeah, where God says to the Israelites, do not go to Egypt to don't sign treaties with Egypt to maintain your strength. Don't get a lot of wives because they're going to pull you away from worshiping me into worshiping idols. Mm-hmm. And then you will hurt people because those worshiping idols change your worldview and change how you view people. And because of that, you're going to view people as less valuable and you're going to enslave them and you're going to do all this stuff. And then they end up doing all of it.
The exact
after thing. Having had all of it done to them. That's the story of the Jews. And it's the story it sounds like, we're just saying to ourselves right now, sounds like this is the story of Christianity. As we've
for sure.
Done the exact same thing.
It's the story of the world.
In many, not of course, not in every area, but at least in America and probably Europe and other places like that. Like, it's just, what a hard thing to accept.
Yeah. It's
and yet something we have to sit with, like deep in our gut and just be like, wow, we've become the very thing that we condemn Rome for all of its horribleness to Christians. And look at us.
Yeah, I mean, and to bring it back, I guess, full circle to race and what Michael was talking about. Yeah, one of my favorite thinkers, Propaganda, he says oftentimes in conversations with...
But you can't just say that. You can't just say, one of my favorite thinkers, Propaganda.
Sorry, yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, true. But you can't just say that. It sounds like I'm about to spew propaganda right
sorry,
now.
Sorry, yeah. Prop is a...
A Christian hip-hop artist. Yeah. Hip-hop artist
Prop is a,
and thinker.
He's a Christian hip-hop artist and thinker. And he talks about how when I'm talking to... Oftentimes when I'm talking to those in majority culture about these issues, you know, the hard part is when you actually go into the history, when we see how terrible it really was. It's it's often so striking and really that bad that it's and so intentional by majority culture that it's hard to accept, really. It's hard to accept and stomach. Not that you were a part of it or even personally complicit, but that like you're a part of that legacy.
We're part of humans and humans did that.
Exactly.
This is rough. Yeah.
Which is wild. And I almost feel like it's similar. It's like once we have that reckoning, and not only talking about race, but just as humans, as humanity, like once we have that reckoning, like we do this to each other. And that like there's such a universal level of repentance that we all need to and ownership and not I don't like ownership, but like accept, like listening to that truth that like as humans, we do this to each other. We harm each other in these ways. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, man. I think just to kind of close it, that's why I think the relational idea of looking at it is so powerful, because we have that united, we're humans together in this.
Yeah.
You and I both, the white, the whitest of the white, the darkest of the dark, we regardless of race, ethnicity, background, sexual orientation, gender, whatever it is, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
But the problem is, even though that's a universal truth, we have to recognize that we separate ourselves, we move ourselves apart, and because of that, we have to have some sort of reconciliation. A reconciliation, if it's not looked at through at least the relational lens, I just don't think we get it, because in essence, majority culture is like kind of yelling like, hey, no, but or at least the conservative side of it is yelling like, no, but this is all these things that you're telling me are, I'm not those things.
Yeah.
And it's like, actually, if we think of it relationally, then we come at it from the perspective of, okay, first, when someone's telling you how they feel, you listen to what they're saying,
right.
Repeat it back, try to understand what they're saying, whether it's factually correct or not. I've said this before, and I know my wife probably disputes the accuracy of this, but feelings are
feelings can still be valued.
Feelings are
even if yeah.
Feelings are what's the real even if they're not right.
Oh yeah.
What I mean by that is feelings are real even if they're not factually correct or based off of factually correct things.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the thing though is but what you'll find is that feelings are generally based off some pretty accurate things, especially if it's relational.
Yeah, for sure.
Or at least some inner work that both parties need to do. So the first step when someone tells you I've been hurt is to listen well, and then we can actually work from that perspective, from that place.
Mm.
Oh, you know, man, you've said that to me. I'm so sorry that I've hurt you. We form a relationship of trust, and then later on, I can be like, "Hey, so you've been telling me that this is a true thing, you know, that this is real. Racism exists in this way, and I guess I just have some questions about it because I'm not seeing it the same way." And then maybe through that conversation, all of a sudden, it's like, "Oh, wow, yeah, no, that's true. We both have a different perspective that is better off because we've talked about it." That's just I just find that to be so important in all of this.
100%.
To harp on the relational aspect.
It's really what Jesus said. It's like, the truth sets you free, but also listening to the truth.
You have to have ears to hear.
Those who, Jesus says it all. Those who have ears to hear, let them hear.
Yeah, so good. Let them hear. So cool. Well, I think we'll just end it there.
I think that's it. This was way longer.
As always, tune in next time for our next podcast. You can also join in the conversation on Facebook and Instagram at Seeking What They Sought. And we hope to see you at the next one. See here? I don't know.